I'm reading from the Gospel of John, chapter 15, verses 9 through 17. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. I have said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. I do not call you servants any longer, because the servant does not know what the master is doing. But I have called you friends, because I have made known to you everything that I have heard from my Father. You did not choose me, but I chose you. And I appointed you to go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, so that the Father will give you whatever you ask him in my name. I am giving you these commands so that you may love one another.
First John 5, 1 through 6. Everyone who believes that Jesus is the Messiah is born of God, and everyone who loves the Father loves his child as well. This is how we know that we love the children of God, by loving God and carrying out his commands. In fact, this is love for God, to keep his commands. And his commands are not burdensome, for everyone born of God overcomes the world. This is the victory that has overcome the world, even our faith. Who is it that overcomes the world? Only the one who believes that Jesus is the Son of God. This is the one who came by water and blood, Jesus Christ. He did not come by water only, but by water and blood. And it is the Spirit who testifies, because the Spirit is the truth.
As Glenette has mentioned already this morning, we are doubling up on John's. First, we heard from the Gospel of John, and then second, we heard a section of an early church sermon called 1 John. And we have been following the sequence of we've been using a sequence of a before Easter scripture and an after resurrection scripture. And so that's what we have for this morning. So there was a time that Mother Teresa was invited to the National Prayer Breakfast. And she was 83 at the time and needed help to stand up. She was a hunched 4'6" at the time, and a special platform was constructed so that she'd be able to look over top of it. Even so, she could barely reach the microphone. She spoke clearly and slowly in her thick Albanian accent, but yet her voice filled the auditorium. And to the National Prayer Breakfast, she said that America has become a selfish nation, in danger of losing the proper meaning of love, which was giving until it hurts. As Glenette mentioned, John and 1 John talk about love a lot. And as you saw actually on the little video clip, love is such a common word to us. We often use it flippantly. We might say that we love our car. We love to garden. And for sure, when we say such things, we're trying to convey something. Love continues to be used in so many common everyday situations, used to describe our nighttime activities, used to describe the weather we prefer. And we employ it to describe the warm feelings of an experience that we may have. So with all those applications of the word love in our minds, how do we hear Jesus when he says, "This is my instruction to you all going forward, love one another as I have loved you"? And was Mother Teresa correct to say, love is giving until it hurts? Well, Father's Day is not until next month, but I'd like to tell three tales about my own dad, for gospel is not really gospel until it hits the road of a life. That is, love is not love until it is carried somewhere. Those of you who are regular here have heard me say before that my dad grew up in a pretty stern Mennonite household. His father was notoriously strict, something we grandchildren did not experience, but my dad and his siblings will be the first to say it. And I also have told you that in his younger days, my dad went by the name of a Franconia cowboy, which was a group of marauding and mischievous young men who performed some mayhem in the township by that name. And when the Mennonite traveling Brunk Tent Revival came through, my dad went and it changed him. That's what he told me. So fast forward his life about 30 years and about three daughters and three sons later. Near to the time when my brother Kenny began to explore the world on his own, the way a teenaged boy will explore the world. Beyond our farm, beyond our church, to places that were frowned upon. Now, when you're trying to recapture history, it is almost impossible to completely recover the original setting, for times do change and actual places disappear. Attitudes mellow and churches flex. And so I'm not sure we have a current equivalent of a back then place called a dance hall. But imagine the 1970s Mennonite sensitivities to underage drinking, to rock and roll music. My mom really did think for a minute that Creedence Clearwater Revival was on par with a George Brunk Tent Revival. Sorry, Mom. Imagine Mennonite sensitivities to dancing and its worldly influence upon us. And yes, it is true, as a teenager, I did get a note from my pastor excusing me from square dancing in high school gym class. It was the late 1960s for Mennonites. Then imagine a location back then where all three could be found. A place that if you were looking for trouble, you'd have no trouble finding trouble there in that place. And so one night, Kenny did not come home. And my dad got worried and felt the need to go looking for him. And he found his car outside a dance hall. And he went inside and found him sitting at a table, and he sat down beside him. And Kenny kind of hung his head, either for being found out or in shame for being found out in such a place. And he turned to his dad and said, "What are you doing here?" And dad said, "Any place that is good enough for my son is good enough for me." If we take care to take our notice, there is a certain sequence to how Jesus is talking. He says, "As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I love you," which is a kind of passing the torch. God, the source of love, and then that love gets passed on. And I do think my dad found himself in that sequence, that there was a connection between the strictness of his past and his God moment in Brunk's Tent Revival, and gently sitting with his own son, whom he had found in an unfavorable place. "Love one another as I have loved you." Fast forward another 15 years, my dad is no longer farming. He had said good riddance to the cows, whom he never did really love all that much anyway, and he was now working for a local farm machinery dealer, first in the repair shop, then on the rural roads of Susquehanna County in his blue service truck, fixing spreaders and balers and corn choppers and barn cleaners and whatever else might be on the fritz, as he was known to say it. As time went on at the dealership, my dad was moved from his truck to the parts desk, which is a far different than the solitude of rural driving and fixing. And you might think that desk work would be easier than wrench work, but it wasn't. Working behind the parts desk, especially during the summer months, was sort of like being the stereotypical bartender that you'd see on television or in a movie, where they dutifully wipe the countertop and ask, "What's troubling you today, buddy? What can I do for you?" And secretly, he did not want to know, but it was your job, and so you asked it anyway. During the summer months, during the haying season especially, is when you'd see farmers at their most impatient, when their nerves would be stretched thin with windrowed hay lying in their fields and the late afternoon thunderstorm in the forecast and a broken baler part on the counter. Do you have one in stock? What do you mean no? How quickly can you get one? Do you have a loaner baler that you can loan me? And some of these farmers' customers got surly and huffy, and things got said and doors got slammed. And if you multiply that by 20, then you have a warm summer day behind the parts counter. In the evening, Dad would come home and eat supper and pull up his chaise lounger under a shade tree, and he would rest. And he would debrief with Mom and with his Lord. It was years later, after Dad retired, I heard from his boss that he was deeply missed behind the parts counter, that his replacement and others too over the years had escaped into the shop to get away from that very counter. His boss said, I don't know how he did it all those years, but we miss him. The parts room was calmer for him being in it. Now, my dad was not perfect. He was not perfected. I could spin other stories if I needed to. But he was connected. He had the abiding thing going on. Abide in me and I in you is what Jesus talked about. My dad had some of that. I don't know if you noticed it, but if you look closely and pay attention to this morning's gospel reading from John, there is a subtle but important change that happens. Jesus announces a relationship change from servant to friend. These dudes had followed Jesus around for 3 full years, and then Jesus says to them all, I do not call you servants any longer, because the servant does not know what the master is doing, but I have now called you friends, because I have made known to you everything that I heard from my Father. You are in on it now. And I appointed you to go and bear fruit that will last, so that the Father will give you whatever you ask in my name. I am giving you these commands so that you may love one another. See, I sometimes think that we think that being a Christian is a polished and professional endeavor, that a degree is preferred, that chaplaincy papers of some sort need to be conferred for us to do this, that a missionary status will give us elevation. Sometimes we think that it's the Mother Teresa's and the rock star pastors and other you name it saints that Jesus is addressing and not us. That is not true. That is not true. Jesus' disciples began as ordinarily as can be. They were fishermen, they were tax collectors, they were ordinary householder women, and a couple of overzealous political activists, just to name a few. And go ahead, add my dad to that list. 8th grade education, ex-Franconia cowboy, father of 6, farmer, church treasurer, sun seeker, parts desk operator, nothing really blog-worthy about him, other than he began ordinarily enough, then he began abiding in God's love, and then he began to love commonly in the places that he went. For love does not require a diploma or a Twitter account, but love does require a friendship source to God. And then, and only then, does the loving begin. Fast forward another bunch of years. Dairy farm's been sold off. The farm machinery dealer is now permanently closed. Dad and Mom moved from their farmhouse to a rancher in the town of Montrose, a 10-year plan that came up closer to 20. Dad busied himself with volunteer work and odd jobs and otherwise days of putzing around their house and cavorting with neighbor men in their projects. And then one day his kidney began to fail. And yes, I did say kidney, for he had lost the other one when it was crushed by a childhood slip on a walkway bridge. And he managed 60 years of life quite well on his one good kidney, as is the medical case most times. But then there came the day when his lone kidney began to give him trouble, and it was a choice between a transplant or dialysis, and he chose the latter, regular dialysis appointments 3 times a week. Early Monday, Wednesday, Friday drives, followed by long afternoon recovery naps on the couch. so that Tuesdays, Thursdays, and weekends would be better. Dialysis became his job, his weekly routine, for 8 years. Now, he explained to me that dialysis is lonesome work, but it does have a routine and a rhythm to it. Nurses have first names, it turns out, and there is a congenial rapport that you develop with them over the years. And because dialysis has its own routine, and because dialysis takes place in dialysis centers, and because other patients come there too, you get to know them as well on a very regular three-morning basis. So into the room with my dad came a middle-aged woman, younger than himself, and on some days she brought with her her teenage daughter named Heather, a young girl with a less than stellar life of her own, no father around, and now a mom in failing health. And my dad would begin to fill in the gaps, talked with her at length, because he had the time. He had 4 hours a day. And I have no idea what they talked about. I do not. But I do know that at some point, faith and church and God made an entry into their conversations. And that one Christmas, my dad bought Heather a Bible, an easier to understand version of the Bible, and he gave it to her as a gift at Christmas. And I found out that she and her mom had been estranged from their church, but recently had begun to find their way back into church again. One morning, the dialysis nurse called the house and wondered why my dad hadn't arrived, and it turns out my dad's heart gave out that morning and he died. And in the receiving line of assorted faces, I met the mom and her young daughter, and all Heather could do was cry, as if it were her dad that had just passed. I once had a teacher who posed this question to our class. If your life could be summed up in one short sentence and carved into your tombstone, what would your tombstone read? Legacy is a word that we hear these days, and funeral directors now have websites to post such things, legacy material. We do not have much record of things that Jesus wrote down. We don't. What we do have are some things that Jesus said. Today's gospel lesson comes shortly before his ugly cross death. It was his commandment. It was his legacy. Love each other the way that I have loved you. Lay down your lives if necessary, for that is what great love is. I think Brian Zond is correct to say that the only way that we can speak of God is through metaphor. We have not seen God, but we do know for sure some things about God. And metaphors like shepherds and sheep and vines and branches help give shape to the unseen God that we know. In John's after Easter sermon to his churches, he uses another metaphor, that of a parent-child bond. And John is not preaching these words to a mother-daughter banquet, nor is he giving this as a speech at a father-son awards banquet. He is not. John is speaking to love bond things in a diverse culture of Greeky people who had much trouble understanding that God could have even flesh in the first place, that God could come this close, and that God's closeness was experienced as love, and that no matter who we are or no matter where we're from, no matter our status, whether it be parts desk worker or a canonized saint like Teresa, it is the love of God that will conquer, and that the fruit of love can grow on the most common of people. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you, is a sequence, a Jesus sequence. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you, is a sequence. There is a church I discovered recently that has a mantra that it lives by. Receive love, give love, repeat. Receive love, give love, repeat. Receive love, give love, repeat. I just think my dad would have agreed.